This is the Fiendmaster from ShadowPublications.com. Mr. Paul Ellard Cooley, author of Closet Treats, The Fiend's Collection, and the 2010 Parsec Award finalist novella Tattoo, available now as an ebook at Amazon.com, Smashwords.com, and BarnesandNoble.com for 99 cents. Was unavailable to record this bumper for the Masters of Horror anthology due to a pressing engagement with the local insane asylum. You can find his free audio fiction at ShadowPublications.com, along with rants, reviews, essays, and the occasional word for myself. But for now, you are listening to the Masters of Horror anthology. Enjoy!
ShadowCastAudio.com presents The Masters of Horror, the anthology. Welcome to a world hidden behind the blinds of reality, a landscape waiting to be molded into a thing of pain and torture. This anthology is not for the faint-hearted. The ideas, themes, and disturbing images portrayed within will send your brain into overdrive on the road to madness. This book is guaranteed to rob you of sleep at night and bring you the nightmares you've most feared. You've been warned.
Joseph Mulock is the author of a few published short stories. He lives in North Bay, Ontario, with his wife, Dawn, four children, a dog, and an evil cat who likes to wander around trying to convince the neighbors he's homeless. Read more on Joseph Mulock at horrorwriters.ning.com/profile/Joseph Mulock. And now for the story, Wounds. Somewhere on the mountain, a hand reached out of the snow. A few seconds later, a second hand appeared. Both were placed firmly on the ground, and the small form pulled itself out of the snow, resting on its knees for a few moments before standing up. It examined its surroundings. This place seemed somehow familiar, but it didn't know why. It also knew that there was something it was supposed to do, but wasn't sure what. As it scanned the area, its eyes fell upon a familiar shape at the bottom of the mountain. Again, it had no idea why it recognized it, but it had some inkling it contained bad memories. There was something about this form in the distance that filled it with anger and hatred, but instinct told it to go there, so it began a slow descent down the mountain. Mary O'Reilly had been staring out the window for most of the day and continued to do so well into the evening. The sun had set so gradually she hadn't even realized it had completely disappeared and night had settled in. Even through the darkness and the flurries of snow, she could still almost make out its form in the distance, almost 15 miles away. It was easier to make out since the living room was almost in complete darkness itself, lit only by a few candles. The mountain seemed to be looking back at her, taunting her. There was something evil about it, Mary knew. It mocked her. She pictured it with a face, eyes that stared at her and a mouth turned up into a malicious grin. The only time she took her eyes away from the window were when she heard the sound of a glass being set back on the table, and she would glance over at her husband, Bob, to see if he was doing anything other than drinking himself into a stupor. Of course, he wasn't. He sat in his chair facing the television, which remained off, taking small sips from a glass every few minutes. She would only shake her head at him and turn her attention back to the window. After a few minutes, she heard him utter a groan, and when she turned back in his direction, she saw the big man slowly walk into the kitchen, not even bothering to turn on the light. She noticed that he didn't bother to bring the glass with him this time. She found out why when he returned, holding a 40-ounce bottle of Glenfiddich by the neck in his right hand. Apparently, he had grown tired of going back and forth to the kitchen and had found a solution to the problem. Mary watched as he sat down and poured another glass. Again, she shook her head. For almost 20 years, this is how they spent January 23rd. She hated to see him like this. Normally, Bob wasn't a heavy drinker. A beer or two a day was normally his limit. Some days, he didn't drink at all. But as it got closer and closer to the 23rd day of the month, she noticed her husband's mood get steadily worse. She knew, however, come morning, he would be better, and by the end of January, he would be back to his jovial self. "He'll be coming tonight," she said without looking away from the window. "Uh-huh." She waited a moment, hoping he would at least glance in her direction. Instead, he kept staring at the black screen of the small television set, sipping from his glass. "So you're just going to sit there and drink all night? So you're just going to stand there and stare at that damn mountain all night?" he shot back. "Well, what do you expect me to do? I'd like to move on, but how can I if you won't?" He said nothing. He picked up the glass and downed it, then twisted the cap off the bottle and refilled it once more. It had been snowing lightly when it had begun its trek down the mountain. By the time it had reached the halfway point, a full-blown blizzard had formed. It had trouble making out the shape in the distance through the blistering snow, but instinct told it which way to go. It followed this instinct and continued on, not bothered by the storm. It knew it had something to do, and even though it wasn't yet certain what that job was, it would let nothing deter it. It continued on its way down, knowing its duty must be accomplished before the light came. "I think we should move back to the city," she said. This time it wasn't just to break the silence, but she really felt the need to leave the place they had called home for several years. She heard a rather loud sigh come from the chair. "Not this again." The words came out almost as a whine. "We've already talked about this." "Yes, we have. But I don't think I can stay here anymore. I know we moved here for a reason, but that reason is gone. I don't see why we're still here." "And where do you think we should go?" "Back to Halifax." "I like it here. It's quiet, and I like my privacy." "So we'll move to somewhere outside the city, but I want to at least be near it." "Why, what's the difference?" "People! That's the difference! Things to do! I mean, we can't even go to the movies here. We have 2 restaurants to choose from if we want to go out to eat. Neither one of them is what I would consider to be a nice place. I want to be able to go out and do stuff. I feel cooped up in this house. I'm going crazy here. Please, Bob, let's move back."
"Mary, we both agreed to move here."
"Yes, because we didn't want to raise kids in the city. We wanted to move somewhere we thought would be safer for them. Well, I don't think that applies anymore."
He downed his drink and filled the glass once more.
"If you fill that glass one more time, I'm going to smash that bottle over your head."
"What is your problem tonight?"
"My problem? I should be asking you the same question. It's been almost 20 years. I wish you would hurry up and get over this so we can both move on. I think moving back will help us do that."
"Get over it? We're not talking about a pet or something here, Mary. This isn't something you just get over."
"I know it's not, but it's been so long. How long do you want to live like this? You have to learn to forgive yourself. It was an accident."
"Yes, but Jonathan's still dead, isn't he?"
"Yes, he is.
But it's not your fault." Whose idea was it to go for a hike in the mountains, in the middle of winter, no less? What was I thinking? You were thinking that it would be a nice way to spend time with your son. I let you go. I didn't know how dangerous it would be. It's as much my fault as it is yours. There was a long pause as she waited to let him consider her words. Then she continued, "Maybe we should get counseling." "I doubt it'll help." "It couldn't hurt to try, except for the fact that we can't afford it." "I'm sure we can find a way. We have issues that need to be resolved." "Like what?" "Like what?" she yelled. "Like the fact that you've been letting this eat you up inside for 20 years? Seriously, Bob, I think you need professional help. You need to realize that Jonathan is dead and it's not your fault. In fact, maybe he died for a reason." She saw Bob's head peek out from behind the back of the chair. What reason could there possibly be? Mary felt a lump in her throat, making it difficult for her to express the thoughts she had kept secret for her husband all these years. When the idea had first occurred to her, she was ashamed of herself. But as the years passed, the idea made more and more sense to her. "I think God took him." "God?" His astonishment was obvious. "You think God killed our son?" "Well, you weren't working. We just about lost our home. We could barely afford to feed ourselves, let alone our son. He was suffering. I think God took him to heaven so he wouldn't suffer any more than he already had." "You've got to be kidding." "Why? I think it makes sense." "Because if that were the case, why is there so many kids still suffering? Why doesn't God just take them all up to heaven? If anything, it would have been to punish us." "Punish us for what?" "For having a baby when we knew there was no way we could afford it. We were being selfish, Mary." "How can you say that?" "Because it's true. What right did we have to bring a kid into the world? No job, no money. We were selfish, and that's all there is to it." He paused to take another drink. "But the problem's been taken care of now, hasn't it?" She turned to look at him, shocked. "What's that supposed to mean?" "Nothing. Just that Jonathan's not suffering anymore." Mary eyed him suspiciously, knowing there was something he hadn't told her. She decided not to press the matter, however, since she was tired and didn't feel like arguing anymore. "I'm going up to bed," she said. "Are you coming?" Bob shook his head. "I'm going to stay up and wait." She knew he would end up drinking until he passed out, as he did every year, but she chose not to try to convince him to give up and come to bed. Past experience told her it would be useless. Instead, she climbed the steps leading to the bedroom without so much as another word. The small figure had finally made it to the bottom of the mountain, and the storm showed no sign of calming. Still, it knew the way. The shape was much closer now. It must be, if it had once again become visible through the storm. But it could also feel its hatred growing as it neared the object. It knew it was almost there. It wouldn't be long now. Bob continued to sit in the chair, not having moved since Mary had gone to bed. The house was completely silent. Most of the candles had gone out by now. Only one remained lit. The bottle beside him was almost empty, but it hadn't done the job tonight. The memories still remained. That shouldn't have surprised him, but it did. It was the same every year. He drank until he could barely remember his own name, yet the events from that night so many years before remained with him. Guilt and shame invaded him as he remembered everything that had happened. The discussion between him and Mary came back to him. He remembered he had suggested putting the boy up for adoption. As far as Mary was concerned, it was out of the question.
Jonathan was her son, and no one could love him and care for him as well as she. So, despite Bob's protests, it was decided that the boy would stay. It's not that Bob didn't love Jonathan. Quite the opposite, in fact. Bob loved him more than anything, which is why he wanted to give his son up for adoption. He had spent 8 agonizing years watching him grow up and suffering as he did. They couldn't afford to feed him properly, which meant the boy was malnourished and weak. With every passing day, Bob hated his wife more and more, as he was forced to watch Jonathan go without things he needed. They had even spent a winter with no heat, and were forced to wear their winter coats, mitts, and toques all the time, even as they slept. Even Mary, who had been a healthy weight when she and Bob had first met, had dropped down to under 100 pounds, and Bob, who had been slightly obese, was now at his ideal weight. He had tried several times to convince Mary to allow the boy to be adopted by a family capable of taking proper care of him, but Mary was adamant that only she could love him as a mother loved her son. Finally, Bob could take no more. He went to refill his glass once more and realized the bottle was empty. He put it back on the table and closed his eyes. Eventually, his body could keep itself awake no longer. His fatigue, combined with the alcohol he had consumed, took its toll, and he unwittingly drifted into unconsciousness. The small figure had finally reached its destination. It was a small, 2-story house, and something inside the creature knew it had been there before. It spent a moment or two gazing at it, trying to remember why it had been here in the past and why it was here now. It opened the door and walked in. Everything was quiet and dark, except for a single candle resting on a table. It found itself mesmerized for a moment by the flickering flames. Then it turned to find a man sitting in the chair, his eyes closed. It stared at the man, trying to figure out how it knew him. A feeling of déjà vu came over it. It seemed to remember being in this room before, looking at the same man as he slept in the exact chair. But the memory wasn't a good one. For whatever reason, its hatred only increased. It didn't take long to realize that its anger was directed toward the man. Slowly, his eyes opened. The man stared at the creature for a long time, not saying anything. The creature stared back, trying to discern what it was about this man it hated. Finally, the man spoke to it. Mary was right. I don't know how she knew, but she was right. He shook his head in disbelief. I wanted to believe it, but I had to be sure. Still, said nothing, just kept staring at the man before him. I'm so sorry, he continued. It noticed water coming from the man's eyes, and was having trouble discerning his words. It had to focus to understand him. I waited so long just to tell you that. More water came, and the man had an even more difficult time speaking. Please understand. I only wanted what was best for you. The creature reached up and felt the back of its head. There was a hole big enough for it to put a finger into and feel inside. It used its finger to feel the inner contour of the hole, causing a memory to come flooding. It was back on the mountain. The man was there too. It remembered being so happy the man had taken it there. It had wanted them to spend time together. It had run ahead, dragging a sled and laughing as the man walked slowly behind. When it had stopped and was looking around, he heard the man whisper something. It had sounded like, "Please forgive me, but this is the only way." The next thing it heard was a loud noise.
It felt a jolt of pain in the back of its head, pushing it forward and into the snow. Next, there was only darkness. It looked up at the man who was still crying. Something came to it. Father? The man smiled. Yes, he said. I am your father. There was another long pause and they regarded each other. I'm sorry, the man said yet again. I couldn't take care of you properly. I couldn't let you suffer, and I didn't know what else to do. Can you ever forgive me? It didn't recognize the word forgive. It looked at this man and felt only anger and hatred. That was all it knew. The man kept staring at it, not blinking, as if waiting for an answer from it, but it didn't know what to say. It may not know what it meant to forgive, but somehow it knew it didn't want to. Its instinct kicked in once again, and it leapt on the man, knocking the chair and both of them backward. It landed on top of the man. His eyes gave away his fear, but he didn't struggle. He lay there and let the creature sink its teeth into his throat. Not hard at first, just enough to draw blood. The man was breathing heavily and whimpering silently, but still didn't struggle. It was as if he felt he deserved to die. The creature looked into the man's eyes. The fear and hurt in them made it feel something he hadn't in a long time, if ever. Compassion. It had intended to hurt this man as much as it could. Revenge was the only thing it knew up to this point. But seeing this man as it had never seen him before, vulnerable, made it feel sorry for him. It no longer had the urge to torture him. In one quick movement, it leaned in and tore his throat out in one bite. The man's body went limp, and his head thumped back, hitting the floor. Blood poured out of his throat. The creature knew it had accomplished a task it was meant to. It wiped its mouth and left the house, making its way back up the mountain and knowing it would never come back to this house again.
This has been a presentation of ShadowcastAudio.com and is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Copy it, share it, pimp it all you want. Just don't try to sell it or change it. We keep this going through you, the listener. For the duration of the Masters of Horror podcast, all who make donations to ShadowcastAudio.com will receive an ebook copy of the Masters of Horror. Just specify which format you would like. In addition, you'll also be entered to win a print version signed by myself, which will be given away at the end of the last episode. The music for the podcast is an original piece done specifically for the Masters of Horror by Christopher Carlson. Find more great selections at ChristopherCarlson.com. Thanks for listening.
Scars. They remind us who we are, what we are, and where we have been. But when a scar takes away your identity, what would you do to get it back? Tattoo, the Parsec Award-nominated horror novella from Paul Eller Cooley's Themes Collection, now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com and Amazon.com for 99 cents. For more information, visit ShadowPublications.com. We don't believe in happy endings.